This is Jonathan Bingham. Welcome to Get Connected. I pray that God's Word will challenge you, encourage you, and equip you wherever you are in your walk with Jesus Christ. Thank you for listening to this audio presentation. This recording finishes a series of studies presented by my wife, Trina Bingham, in response to questions from class members about how we should view the popular books and articles related to the Shemitah and Blood Moon Tetrad they are hearing about today. It was presented to our adult Bible study at Eastside Church in Marietta, Georgia in January 2015. God bless you as we study His Word. Well, good morning, everyone.
Buenos dias.
As Scott is finding thingies to pass around for you guys to fill out so we can have more fodder for next time around, let's go ahead and get started with our lesson this morning. I want to get us caught up on where we are. For the last few weeks, Trina has been showing us the history and background of this idea of the seven-year yearly Sabbath of years cycle that God put in place in the Old Testament that is called the Shemitah. And we began last week. Last week was a bit of a pause, but I think it was an important and necessary pause for us to ask questions, discuss stuff, fill in some blanks for everyone, that kind of stuff. And so I think that while last week we can't really say we made a whole lot of progress, I think we did kind of get everyone back up kind of to the same place. And so what we're going to do today is pick up and potentially even finish this study this morning. And what we'll start with first is we will finish talking about the year of Jubilee that we started talking about some last week. And then the final topic in Trina's sessions will be the blood moons, the blood moon tetrad thing that is an astronomical event that we are in the middle of right now. So we'll talk about all that stuff, and then I just thought, why, you know, this is why I love being around a group of people with brains and creative imaginations and a sense of good ideas and all that stuff. Kitty, last week or the week before, you know, when we realized that the whole point of our lesson series is to encourage us to be ready, Kitty asked a very great and what should have been really an obvious question that I hadn't thought of. What does that mean, to be ready? How can we be ready? What does it look like to be ready? So we're going to have some lessons on that when we finish this series here, so that it can be very practical. Because remember, what we're talking about is not certain that, you know, where we can put dates on the calendar and say this is exactly what's going to happen on this exact date for sure, that kind of stuff. I'll say it again, we're not giving financial advice or predicting the end of the world or anything like that. All we're doing is recognizing a number of different phenomena that some of which are spiritual, some of which God set in motion by when he had Moses up on the mountain, others of which he set in motion when he created everything and set everything, all the astronomical bodies into motion, that they would all that they would be there for signs. That's the first thing that he says about them in Genesis, and so that all those things, all those different phenomena, are converging around us, and that we should take note, and that we should be ready. So, baby, why don't you go ahead and come up, and we will we'll get started on Jubilee.
Okay.
One question about Jubilee this before you start, because maybe I didn't completely understand it last time. Is the Jubilee year, which is the 50th year, is that the first year of the next set of sevens?
Yes.
It's not a separate year separated out.
And Trina mentioned last...
I think she said that, but I wanted to clarify.
Yes, that is the case, but she also mentioned that there is disagreement about that.
I don't think there is anymore.
Well,
go ahead.
It seems really clear that the 50th year is actually the first year of the next seven-year cycle. It seems very clear.
No, it is very clear. Leviticus 25. You must count off seven Sabbath years, seven sets of seven, adding up to 49 years in all. Then on the Day of Atonement, in the 50th year. So I don't know why there's disagreement. And then it says it again in verse 11. This 50th year will be a jubilee. So I don't know why people are...
Well, the question is it a 50-year cycle or is it a 49-year cycle?
Oh, I see. They're talking about the cycle.
Time
okay.
Out of time, or is it...
Well, what we said last week was that the year of jubilee was just the first year in each 49
years. Yes. It's the 50th year, but it's also the first year
of the next
49 years.
Because the key is the number 7.
No, I know I can understand that, but sometimes there are things where they call it sort of like time out of time. You know, it's just
right.
Separate and
well,
apart.
And the reason for my explanation is that it seems very clear that the 49-year cycle is the right answer, but if you look at some of the websites and other information about this topic. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't do it that way. Some of them hold to a 50-year cycle. So that's why I said it seems clear, but not everyone agrees.
Oh, okay.
And so if you do look in, wherever to back up what we're talking about here, then you'll find that some do it differently.
But the evidence and history would point then to the
49-year cycle. Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And we'll see that. Last week we touched on it, but... We had such good discussion. We were just sort of...
Because we touched on it, but the thing was that when we get up into more modern times, we don't really know, so we don't know.
Yep. So that's why you look for fingerprints.
Yeah.
And see
if
we
have to do our detective work,
that,
basically.
That appears that way.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about what a jubilee is not. It's not what we think it is. Like, woo, jubilee, celebration, jubilation. It's not that. It's actually a Latin corruption of the Hebrew word yovel, which, of course, means ram's horn, right? So in Leviticus, like I said in chapter 25, on the Day of Atonement in the 50th year, blow the ram's horn. So in Hebrew, it actually says yovel, okay? And that's where we get the word jubilee. And what it really means is it's a release. It means liberty. It's a time in Leviticus, it says, a time to proclaim freedom throughout the land for all who live there. So this idea of jubilee is not a party like celebration. It means release, set free every 50th year, okay? After the seventh seven.
That seems like it would be a party, though, if you're a slave and you're
set free. Well, it could be.
And you're set free.
It could be. I mean... I'm sure it was supposed to be a time, but I just want to make clear that that's not what the word means.
Right.
It means to release, to set free.
If you're set free, then it is a celebration.
Absolutely, but it's a celebration because you're set free. So there's a meaning behind
the... Maybe not for the person who had to give up all the debt.
Yeah. There are two sides to it.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. Seriously, you can go back and read chapter 25 of Leviticus, and it talks about, you know, how you're supposed to... price out how much you owe, you know, to buy your freedom, basically. How many years left in that jubilee cycle will determine basically what you're worth. And it's very interesting. Okay.
I have a quick question. There's a statement here in verse 12 I don't understand. Because I thought that they weren't supposed to do any farming during that
true.
Year.
Yes, it's just it's continuing the law of the Shemitah.
But in verse 12 it says, you shall eat its crops out of the field.
My version says you may eat whatever the land produces on its own. That's the meaning. Yeah, you're not supposed to plant and harvest. So, and again, if you go back, and you need to read it for yourself, but in Leviticus chapter 25, it says, but what, you may ask, what if we won't have enough to eat? And the Lord says many times in like three different verses, he says, listen, if you obey me, I'm going to bless you so much in that sixth year that come the ninth year, even if you have the Shemitah and then the year of Jubilee, right, the super Shemitah, 2 years in a row where you can't plant, you're going to have so much produce from that sixth year that you're still going to be eating from that crop in the ninth year. So you're going to have enough for the Shemitah year in the seventh year, in the eighth year, which would be Jubilee, beginning of the next 49-year cycle, and then you get to that ninth year. So God says, I'm going to do this for you.
And you look back at the time that the children of Israel spent in the wilderness, and the manna that God provided for them, Every day of the week, he gave them enough for the day. Anything that they got that was more than enough, it would go. It would be rotten.
Worms.
That next day, except on Friday. And then every Friday, he gave them twice as much. They were able to collect twice as much and keep it for twice as long as usual. Mm-hmm. But that picture of God providing when they obeyed, when they didn't work on the Sabbath, that picture there just comes up over and over again in the Scripture. And our failure to trust God, their failure to trust God, our failure to trust God, comes out every time we don't trust him to provide for us, and we do it our own way. And I believe that we are suffering consequences of that in our own country and probably in our own lives.
So the Jubilee year then is also an extra Shemitah year.
Yes.
They're not supposed to work.
Yep. The land, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, getting back to the number 50, we see this number again with the Feast of Pentecost. Of course, Pentecost means the 50th day. And 50 days from the 16th of the first month, Abib, which also known as Nisan, if you use the Babylonian term. So 50 days after that was the Pentecost. So we see that number 50. Okay, so the 50 is the Jubilee year, and also 50 days after the 16th day of Abib. All right, I mentioned this last week. There was a rabbi who died in 1217. Now remember, the number 7 comes up a lot. And you just need to be aware of it, make your own conclusions. But so he died in 1217, and he, even Roman bishops would get his advice on things. He was a prophet, and he prophesied, and the Ottomans were just coming into power at this time, okay? So, you know, they weren't like a superpower yet. And he said, when the Ottomans, or the Turks, conquer Jerusalem, remember Jerusalem, not Israel, Jerusalem, they will rule over Jerusalem for 8 jubilees. So do the math. 50 times 8 is 400. Afterwards, Jerusalem will become a no man's land for 1 jubilee, 150-year period. And then in the 9th jubilee, that next 50-year period, it will once again come back into the possession of the Jewish nation, which would signify the beginning of the messianic end time. Now, the Bible tells us that, you know, a prophet is legitimate if what he says comes true. If it doesn't, he's not legitimate. Well, exactly 300 years later, after he died, he made that prophecy in 1217. He died that year. 300 years later, in 1517, exactly, that's when the Turks took control of Jerusalem. And how long were they in control? Exactly 400 years. And can you pull up the map of Israel real quick? It's the third slide. All right. Well, that's just modern day, of course. But just,
is there
just,
another slide?
You can go to the next one, please. Okay, so in 1917, exactly 400 years after the Turks took control of Jerusalem, the Balfour Declaration, okay, this was on November 2nd. It was basically a letter from the UK, United Kingdom's Foreign Secretary, James Balfour, Arthur James Balfour, to Bear, Britain's most illustrious Jewish citizen, Baron Lionel Walter Rothschild. And you can go to the next slide and you'll see a picture. That's Balfour. And the next slide, that's the Jewish gentleman, Rothschild. Basically, they were just saying that the British government was in support of a Jewish homeland again in what was known as Palestine. Okay, and we know we don't want to call it Palestine because, of course, that's a derogatory term referring to the Philistines.
That's 1917.
Okay, so I can read it to you, but I don't think you probably care. But okay, so there's Rothschild. All right, so the next month, again, 1917, and this is so cool. Can you go to the next slide, honey? This is what I wanted to show you last week. See the gentleman here in the front? That's General Edmund Allenby, Sir Edmund Allenby. And he had such regard for the Jewish people in God's Holy Land that unlike the Kaiser back in 1898, who came into the city, you know, on his horses, He dismounted, and he was a cavalry man, so for him to do that was very humble. So he said, no, I won't do that. So he peacefully walked in through the Jaffa Gate. That's the Jaffa Gate, December 11, 1917. And so that was officially when the Ottoman-Turkish rule ended. And then, of course, that became the British mandate in Palestine. Okay? So we see, and then the next slide, you can see him. He's actually quite handsome. Mm-hmm. That's Sir Edmund Allenby. Okay, so so let's talk about what Rabbi Judah ben Samuel said.
Is that the guy from 1217?
Yes, that's the rabbi. Mm-hmm. So he said, when the Ottomans conquer Jerusalem, they will rule over Jerusalem for 8 jubilees, 400 years. Afterwards, Jerusalem will become a no man's land for 1 jubilee. So we know that in 1948, David Ben-Gurion made the announcement that we are now, you know, we're going to be a Jewish homeland again, a Jewish state. But that didn't really happen, though, until the next year, 1949, okay? And then, you know, we already covered this a few weeks or months ago with the war, because as soon as they announced that, right, the Arab neighbors came at them, and there was, you know, the war. Of course, they won, the Jews won, but they didn't have control over Jerusalem. And then we know that in what year was it that they got back control of Jerusalem? 1967. How many years had passed since 1917? Exactly 50. And Rabbi Samuel said it would be a no man's land, Jerusalem, okay? And it wasn't. Nobody really, you know, it was all divided up, right? It would be a no man's land until the next Jubilee. Now, his next, the continuing of his prophecy, in the ninth Jubilee, which is 67, it will once again come back into the possession of the Jewish nation, which would signify the beginning of the messianic end time. So, what's 50 years from 1967? 2017. Okay. I'm just laying it out there. You have to decide what you're going to believe about this. So, moving back to my key point. He hates it when I call it that. Hee hee. All right, can you bring up that Six-Day War photo that I just adore? June 6th is the second day of the war. They got control of Jerusalem. Is that not, look at that. I mean, you can see. I just adore that photo. I absolutely adore that. They're laying their eyes for the first time on the Temple Mount. And, you know, they hadn't had possession of it since 70 AD when the Romans destroyed them and sent them into the diaspora. Okay, so we see prophecy fulfilled, right? I mean, we are living in fantastic times. But like Jonathan said, you can go to the next slide, sweetheart. Like Jonathan said, okay, yeah, that's cool. I mean, yeah, maybe, you know, a good coincidence and all that. But when you start to see several things converging, okay, that's a wake-up call for us. And for us to ignore that and to think that there's nothing significant about that, I have no words. We have to at least acknowledge that something is happening, okay? So let's talk about this so-called blood moon tetrad. Okay, Jonathan knows more about the astronomical.
Do you want me to introduce it?
Yeah, would you? Because it.
Did you have a question, Joe? I did, actually. Can I ask a math question or a date question? If right now, 2014, 2015 is the Shemitah year. Like
yes,
yes, it is. Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
So 2015, 2016, we think, would be the year of Jubilee.
That's correct.
Then where does 2017 come in? Because then it would be over. Didn't we say that the next 50 years from the time 1967 would be 2017?
And that right there.
Let me show you. Hold on.
That is
I know what she's asking.
That is a leftover from the difference between
using 50 years as a common, as the easy multiplier that's used when, like,
see,
for the prophetic
stuff.
Really
think you have
no, it is.
Nine.
Look, no, I let me write it down. Okay.
Okay, remember, Jill, when we were talking about the calculating the years and using 360-day years as when you're calculating stuff, when actually there's no such thing as a 360-day year. It's the same thing that when you're talking about prophetic looking into the future, you use 50 years for this Jubilee cycle. When they're actually, when you put it on the calendar, it is 50 years from the beginning of that.
Do you see it now? Do you see it?
That's 49 years. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. It's
and
49
so
years.
So her question is, since it's 2017?
Right, so I'm trying to figure out where 2017 comes in.
Well,
that's the 50th year. 1617 is the 50th year?
Yes. And so that's, like I said, that's caused by using 50 years to do the prophetic looking forward stuff, when actually, when you look at the calendar, it's 49 years. It's one of the joys of trying to study this stuff.
Makes your eyes cross.
It does.
It's hard.
Well, the Jubilee year is 1516. I mean, the seventh year of the seven-year period is 1516, but the Jubilee year is the following year, which is 1617.
Yes.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Because you have to remember that.
I thought Jubilee was this coming this year, 1516.
Yes.
In the fall, we believe so. This is what we're talking about. Nobody, now, I need to be very clear. Nobody knows for sure when the Jubilee is. Now, the rabbis have been counting the Shemitahs for centuries, okay? So we know we're in a Shemitah year. There's no question.
That's the point. The Shemitah years were every 7 years.
Yes.
But you said that the Jubilee years was the following year.
Yes.
Which is the first year of the next set of seven.
Yes.
So it serves double duty.
Yes.
It's not in between. It is the 50th.
And if you look at the beginning of a 7 year, at the
that's
beginning
why we count
cycle,
49 years.
On day one, on the Rosh Hashanah 1966, it would be 50 years until that next Jubilee. But it's a 49-year cycle, and so that's like, see what I'm saying? And so that's
sort of
the challenge
really.
Of this.
I'm gonna get it when you can. Okay, I get it.
Okay.
They overlap. Okay, yeah.
So is there a particular day in September?
There is. There is.
Because that turned 50.
Yom Teruah.
I turned 50.
That's why I don't like.
Really?
Wait, when?
I'm 67 in September.
The Jubilee incarnate. Who knew, Hera?
Who knew? That's awesome.
Yep, they're gonna name me Shmita.
That's great. That is your new name, Shmita. That's
all right. Let me give you an introduction to the astronomical thing, background behind this blood moon tetrad thing, and if you go to the internet, actually you can go to the NASA website and type in the search term tetrad, and it'll come up, and there's a section of at least one page. There used to be another page which seems to have disappeared. I can't exactly figure that one out.
On NASA's side?
Yeah. But there's still one section where they talk about what a lunar tetrad is. What that is, it is purely an astronomical phenomena that consists of four consecutive total lunar eclipses. Now, that's not 4 months with them. Typically, an eclipse cycle is every 6 months. And so, typically, you can find a lunar eclipse, and then typically 6 months later, you'll have another one. Same with the total eclipse of the sun, or the solar eclipses, that they happen on six-month cycles, generally right around when the lunar eclipses are, because remember that the way that this stuff happens is that the orbit of the moon around the Earth has to be in line with the sun for that to happen. That happens about every 6 months as that goes around. Okay. Anyway, so a tetrad is just simply that those four consecutive lunar eclipses happen to all be total eclipses of the moon. Does that make sense? Nothing special about that. In fact, that's not incredibly rare.
Right.
About 16% of the time that happens. And so, but that's what a tetrad is. And you can look at NASA, will tell you what, you know, all these years that we're tetrads. Well, what makes a blood moon, okay, and then you have another definition of a blood moon. A blood moon is when a lunar eclipse, total lunar eclipse, happens on a Jewish feast day. Now, the trick and the rarity occurs when you have both a cycle of four total lunar eclipses happen, when those lunar eclipses are each one on Jewish holidays, feast days. Typically, and realize that that's not that tricky. I mean, if it were looking at our civil holiday schedule, you know, you've got President's Day, and then you've got Valentine's and Easter and July the 4th and Thanksgiving and all that stuff, right? Now, that would actually be impossible for those to have, you know, consecutive, because they're not based on the lunar cycle in the first place. But the Jewish calendar, the Jewish feasts were. Mm-hmm. And so it's not amazing that it can happen that way, but it is incredibly rare. And so what happens, typically, it's what is it that defines the beginning of the Jewish year? What defines that? The definition of Nisan 1 is what?
New moon.
The first new moon after the spring equinox.
And the barley harvest, so they can wave it at the feast.
And so the fact that there are lunar eclipses on Nisan 1 is not a shocker, because it's new moon. But then what happens is lunar eclipse on Nisan 1. Excuse me.
Nisan 14, whatever.
Because full moon, 14 days later, so Passover. New moon on Nisan 1, oftentimes a solar eclipse on that day, and then full moon, mm-hmm. total eclipse, 6 months later, Feast of Tabernacles, sometimes on Yom Kippur, but that one being a total lunar eclipse, and then the next Passover, another total lunar eclipse, and then the next Feast of Tabernacles or Yom Kippur, another total lunar eclipse. That right there is called a blood moon tetrad, and it's all those things coming together, none of which by themselves are particularly rare, but together those things happening are in fact incredibly rare. It's happened 7 times since Jesus. And by the way, it didn't happen around the crucifixion, just in case anybody would jump to that hopeful conclusion. That didn't happen. I can tell you when. Oh, you have it up on your screen too. Those are your glasses.
One quick question.
Yes, John.
So a total, if I remember right, a total lunar eclipse over Russia may not be a total lunar eclipse here.
That's not true. The solar eclipses are the ones that are different. But if you can see the moon, wherever you are, if it's a total lunar eclipse, you can see the total lunar eclipse.
So it's worldwide.
Yes, and so it is worldwide. But here's something that's interesting since you bring that up. We are in the middle of this tetrad thing going on right now.
Now, I have slides for this if you want me to pull.
She has slides for this.
Do you have?
Let's talk about the history before we get to modern.
Let's talk about the history before we get to modern, okay?
Can you go to the next slide?
I'm going to go to the next slide in just a moment. Okay, well, never mind.
It'll all be clear.
Don't get ahead of me, Bingham.
Okay, so to speak to the rarity of these events, these are the 7 previous lunar tetrad, blood moon tetrads that have happened in history since Jesus. And you've got it here, 162, 795, 842, 860, and then a gap of 600 years, 1493, 1949, 1967, and then now the one that we're in, which began in 2014. So those are the 8 now that we're living in the 8th one. Yes, you in the back.
What happens? We can't use anything except the Jewish calendar for this, because our calendar was changed when they changed from the Julian to the Gregorian.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
We lost or gained, I don't know how many days, 11 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they hadn't made allowances for the fact that there were partial days.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Figuring the timetable of the calendar.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Gregorian Julian calendar issue is not hard.
I mean, it's not hard, but the thing is, so the days, really have to be, you have to do it against the Jewish calendar.
Absolutely.
Not against...
Because that's all that matters.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now listen, I've obviously done tons of research on this. These first, four, okay, since the time of the crucifixion, I think some of wherever I got this chart, it's all over the internet, different websites. But anyway, it's almost like people were kind of forcing some stuff into those first four.
I agree.
I mean, yeah, there are things that happen, but nothing really stands out until you get to 1493.
And what the person...
So I want to be honest with you there.
Yeah, what the person is trying to suggest that wrote this stuff and that came up with these connections for those first four, is he's trying to suggest that there's a connection not only with Jewish history around these tetrads, but also the Roman Catholic Church's history and the history of the Muslim interaction with Jews, the Jews during that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's those first four things are really focused on Roman Catholic Church and Muslim activities during those period of time. And we, you know, you can look back on it, and as Trina says, I appreciate your being honest with them about this, because you look at those four things and you think, well, whoopty stinking dude.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't blow my skirt up that happened around that blood moon tetrad. But it gets better.
Okay, so let's just talk about what we do know, all right? So remember what happened in 1492? Columbus sailed the ocean. Okay. It was also the year, of course, that the European nation that had the most Jews in it, Spain, had become, you know, basically a haven for the Jews after the diaspora of the first century. And so, of course, we know that Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand, they kicked them out.
And do you know what they used? I learned that last night as I was studying beside Trina. What was it? Monty Python fans?
Oh. Nobody expects the
Spanish Inquisition.
They invented the Spanish Inquisition to get rid of the Jews in Spain.
Remind me what the Spanish Inquisition
is. Well, their main tools are fear.
Fear.
Fear and
okay. Let's start over. Enter the room again. Dun, dun, dun. We should play that skit. You don't know that skit? Oh my gosh, we need to show that. Intimidation, fear, it was torture. But it was horrible. It was horrible.
It wasn't funny.
No, they were basically, didn't they, like, you had to recant being a Jew or whatever, and you had to be a Christian, otherwise they would torture you. It was
just a Christian. You had to be a Christian that believed like they wanted it. They didn't just use it against Jews.
It was bad. But
they would torture you with a comfy chair.
But regardless of what you think about Columbus and, you know, all that, I think it became clear that he discovered America that exact year, because we all know that the United States became the most populated place on the planet for Jews until recent times. There are actually more Jews in Israel than in the United States. Not very much more. There's about 6 million, and about 6 million in the United States, but there's a little bit more in Israel.
That's
so,
recent.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, and if you keep up with what's happening in Europe, it's happening all over again, the anti-Semitism. And the only safe place for them, besides the United States, is Israel. So fulfilling prophecy, right? Isaiah 700 plus BC said, can a nation be born in one day? But you will in one day. So there was a blood moon tetrad that next year. Okay, again, the first feast of the year is Passover, right? There's seven feasts, right? The last feast is the Feast of Tabernacles. That's when they make little tents and they, you know, stay outside. Some of my Jewish friends do that with their kids. It's pretty cool. Okay, so there was a blood moon tetrad that year, 1493, 1494, Passover, Tabernacles. Passover, Tabernacles. Okay, so there wasn't another one until 1949, 1950. Now, we know that prophecy in Isaiah came true May 14, was it, 1948, when David Ben-Gurion announced the state of Israel was reborn again. So prophecy was fulfilled, and then we see a blood moon tetrad that next year, plus 49, 50. again, Passover, mm-hmm. Tabernacles, Passover, Tabernacles. And now every time, there's a pattern here, every time there's a blood moon tetrad on the Jewish feasts, it's always a time of bloodshed for the Jews, followed by victory. Every single time. Persecution, bloodshed, war, something like that. But they always end up being blessed in the end. So we see that in 1493, 94, that blood moon tetrad, because then the Jews had a place to go. They had a place to escape from Spain in the Inquisition. In the same month in which their majesties, Ferdinand and Isabella, issued the edict that all Jews should be driven out of the kingdom and its territories, in the same month they gave me, this is Christopher Columbus in his diary, they gave me the orders to undertake with sufficient men my expedition of discovery to the Indies. So begins his diary. So that was pretty cool. The expulsion that Columbus refers to was so cataclysmic an event that ever since the date 1492 has been almost as important in Jewish history as in American history. On July 30th of that year, the entire Jewish community, some 200,000 people, were expelled from Spain. Tens of thousands of refugees died while trying to reach safety. In some instances, Spanish ship captains charged Jewish passengers exorbitant sums, then dumped them overboard in the middle of the ocean. In the last days before the expulsion, rumors spread throughout Spain that the fleeing refugees had swallowed gold and diamonds, and many Jews were knifed to death by brigands hoping to find treasures in their stomachs. Like Mordecai said to Esther, help will come in another way, and America was blessed by God. And more importantly, we believe that America's purpose was to protect Israel and offer a safe haven for the Jewish people. All right, so getting to 1949, we know that as soon as they declared their Jewish state, that the first Israeli Arab war happened. And
which was amazing.
The War of, for Independence is the name of it.
I don't know if you ever said it exactly this way as I was reading in preparation for this morning, but the moment that the declaration was made in 1948, mm-hmm. immediately, mm-hmm. before Israel even had a chance to
have an army.
Yeah, to do anything, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Iran, and Iraq, and maybe one other country, all attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately.
Yeah. It's a miracle they survived, that they're
well,
here.
And that they could even do that and get by with it. It's just amazing.
Yes, it is. The whole history of the Jews is just, the fact that they're even here, it's all started with Isaac, and he is a miracle baby, because it was impossible. Abraham was impotent, let's be honest, okay? And, of course, Sarah was far beyond childbearing years. And so the very fact that they are here is a miracle, starting with Isaac. And the fact that they keep winning. It's just against all odds. Okay, so even though they were declared a nation in 1948, they didn't have a government, permanent government, until January 25th, 1949. So they had a transitional government until then. Okay, so they weren't even on solid ground yet, okay? So then we see this tetrad and 4950. Remember, every time there's a blood moon tetrad that falls on those Jewish feasts, there's bloodshed, persecution, war, something like that, and then they get victory. So, of course, they won. They wouldn't be here if they had lost. Okay, so then we don't see another tetrad until 67-68. And, of course, we know what happened June 6, 1967. They recaptured Jerusalem, fulfilling Rabbi Samuel's prophecy back in the 13th century. And again,
that was in 1967?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm, the Six-Day War. And that if you missed that when I covered that, that is one of the best. I wish somebody would make a movie out of that, Spielberg
awesome.
Or somebody.
That'd
and it is
awesome.
Such a... it's like Midway, it's like so cool. It's so supernatural. Of course, Israel's neighbors again, they prepared to destroy them. And, they were coming against them, and they kept saying, and I quoted, in May of that year, they were saying, we want to annihilate the Jews, wipe them off the map. I quote, this is what they wanted. And so Israel said, bet me. And so they had a preemptive strike. So they started it. They're like, we're not going to wait till you attack us. And they wiped out most of the Egyptian Air Force. Anyway, we covered all that. But, oh, gosh, it's so exciting. Okay, so would you go to the next slide, please? Oh, wait, before you do, of course, we're in this 2014-15. Did anybody see the blood moon in October? Oh, did you see it? Nobody did? I think I saw it early in the morning because it was setting, maybe? Or
Yes.
It doesn't actually look red, though, does it?
Yes, it did. It was creepy. I saw it. I was.
It's exactly the same.
It's kind of orangey red.
It causes sunsets to be orangish and reddish sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the amount of crud in the air, right? The cruddier the skies, the better the sunsets.
Right.
Well, the same thing's happening, that the sun's over here, the earth is here, and the moon is here in the shadow of the earth. But because of the atmosphere in the earth, the sun is sunlight is refracted, a little bit of it is, to actually still hit the moon, but it's the reddish part of the spectrum that makes it through and hits it. And so depending on how cruddy the skies are, then sometimes you can have lunar eclipses that are, sometimes they're darker or lighter, depending on the stuff in the air, but sometimes also they're just incredibly deep red. I have some photographs. I can show you some pictures of a lunar eclipse, and they absolutely are reddish, and depending on how dark they are, it can be deep, deep red.
Okay, so I think we can finish today. If you would go, please, to the next slide. I want to have you come back to this one, though, in just a moment. If you go to the next slide. Okay, this is a cool, what do you call this, a meme? I don't know, graphic. You can see it very easily. We have, of course, these two have already happened, Passover, Easter time. This last fall, and then, of course, the next blood moon is going to happen April 4, and then Sukkot, of course, is the word for tabernacle, booths, whatever, September 28th of this year. Okay, so go back, if you would, please, to the previous slide. If you look at all these, sorry, they have, like, different graphics, but just looking at the astronomical photos, okay, and the lunar, what's different about this tetrad? Do you see it?
Two of the...
What is different about the one that we're in right now than all the others? What is going to happen that has never happened in the other blood moon tetrads?
Whatever that third thing is, I don't know.
Can you see it?
No.
Go ahead and go to the next slide.
What is it?
Total solar eclipse. Now, according to, you know, Jewish tradition and the Talmud and all that, blood moons, not even just blood moons, but blood moon, that means it turns red, right? The refraction or whatever of light. Total lunar eclipses have always been a warning for Israel. It's like an omen, like, something's going to happen. But tradition says that whenever there's a total solar eclipse, it's a warning to the nations, to the Gentiles, the rest of the world. So on the first day of spring, that's the equinox, right? March 20th this year, there's going to be a total solar eclipse. And this is how this tetrad differs from all the others. We've never seen this before, as far as we know.
First day of spring?
Yes.
And so that's coming up in, what, a month and a half? And then, of course, you cannot have a lunar eclipse at the same time as a solar eclipse. It's impossible. So a couple weeks later, then you have that blood moon, and I really encourage you guys to see it. It's creepy. It is creepy. Now, the interesting thing is that this one, this last one here, this is the one that you're going to be able to see from Jerusalem. That's the only one that they're going to be able to see.
I thought that was an interesting interesting feature.
He can answer that. Now, why is that? It's something to do with how
realize.
You can't see any of these other ones?
Israel is not going to see the first three of these four blood moons, which I thought was really, really interesting. They are not going to see them. No, you can't. I didn't say that. I said that if you're in any country and you can see the moon,
if you can see
the moon, when the eclipse is going on, then any place sees the same thing, essentially the same thing. But if it's daytime during the total lunar eclipse for you, then you can't see it. So it's going to be daytime in Israel. It was daytime in Israel for these two. It will be also for this one. This is the only one of these that you'll be able to see from Israel.
And guess what? It's
so
going to be...
So we wouldn't see that one.
I don't know.
Only a little bit of it, just because of the way it falls in time-wise.
What about the solar eclipse?
I was going to look that up a second ago. I can't remember where it's visible from. It's not Israel, though, to see the totality.
If you go to NASA's website, I mean, you can just click on Blood Moon, Lunar Tetrad, anything like that. They'll show you a map. I don't really know how to read it that well, because that's not my area, but it'll kind of show the penumbral or whatever the word is. It's like a wavy map, and it'll kind of be gray and then dark gray, and it kind of shows you like where it's going to be most prominent. But there's another thing about this last blood moon. It's going to be a super moon, which means it's going to be appear bigger than normal.
Only slightly.
But it's going to be, I mean, you don't get more obvious than that. So let me read what I've got here. Okay, in addition to the four blood moons, there's a total eclipse of the sun on March 20th, 2015, coming up about a month and a half, which will be Nisan 1 of the Jewish calendar. It will start the new year, the religious year. Okay, now there's going to be actually another partial eclipse of the sun on September 13th, which is Rosh Hashanah. So I don't have that on my thing up here, but on September 13th, that is going to be the start of what we believe will be the Jubilee year. And there will be a partial solar eclipse that day. It's also the last day of the Sabbath year and the beginning of what we believe will be the Jubilee. Now, look at the pattern here. Whenever, can you go back? Okay. Let's look at the pattern here. What, okay, 1493... We know that America was discovered, which would eventually be the most populated nation on the earth for Jews, right? I mean, more Jews live in the States, you know, after World War II, you know. Okay, so now, of course, it's not true anymore because they're more and more going to Israel, which is good for them. That's, you know, that's the, where they should be. Okay, safest place for them. 4950. That was when they got the nation back, right? So we're looking at land. They got more land back. They got Jerusalem back. What's going to happen here? I don't know, but they're going to get land back. And I think they're going to get the Temple Mount back. I do. I can't say that for sure. I'm just using my logic and reason. Seemingly, to me anyway, obvious that something is going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be Hezbollah, you know, Iran. Scary times, exciting times, but scary times. We should be praying for Israel. We're commanded to do that, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I wouldn't be surprised if they had another war. Remember, those blood moons always involve bloodshed, persecution, war, something like that. And then they get land. So, I was going to say one more thing. According to NASA, the total blood moon on 9/28 will be at perigee. Thank you. I don't even know what that means.
Closest to the Earth.
Okay. Closest to the Earth. There you go. Meaning it'll be a super moon. And it is.
That's why they call it a super moon, because it's like 3 or 4% larger than usual.
Okay. All right. Now, just one more thing I'd like to say. Two more things. According to Jewish tradition, the earth was created almost 4,000 BC. If you want to be exact, it's like 3,800 and something. But they have always said that man is allotted 6,000 years. And then at the end, you know, the millennium, the messianic reign. Now, whether you believe in evolution or young earth, you know, older, I don't care. We're looking at what the Jews believe, what they have been taught for centuries. We are obviously finishing that sixth millennium. Millennia. And all these things are converging. So let's count it. We're getting to the end of the sixth millennium. We're having the blood moon tetrad. We're in a Shemitah year. We're about to start based on history, right? If you look at what happened in 1917, 1966, 67, then this is probably going to be a Jubilee year just based on the evidence, the fingerprints, okay? You're looking at all these things and converging.
And, well, but wait.
There's more.
the Jesus said that when you see the fig tree sprouting again, meaning Israel becoming a nation, that's how everyone interprets that. I think no disagreement on that. When Israel becomes a nation again, Jesus said that that generation that sees it will not pass until the end comes.
So that'll be generally 70 years is the generation.
The way,
it can be 50,
in,
it can be 40.
80s, everybody took, oftentimes a generation in the scriptures, 40 years, so that's why there was so much end time stuff going on in the 80s, 88 reasons why the rapture will occur in 88 was one of those great books.
Right.
But that was using a 40-year generation. You know, now we're well past that. A 70-year generation is also a possibility. That would put us right there at the end of that that window. And so there are just many things all converging that that would suggest that at a minimum we should be ready.
Okay, and then I'll finish with this. Genesis 6:11, and the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. Okay, I hope this will work. I'm going to play you a rabbi reading in Hebrew. I'll try to, it's up as loud as it'll go. You'll hear Noah, and Shem, Ham, and however you say Japheth in Hebrew. Okay, here we go. Ready? You'll hear the Hebrew word for violence. Here we go.
Vayoled Noah shelosha vanim, et Shem, et Ham, ve'et Yafet. Vatishahet ha'aretz lifnei Elohim, vatimmale ha'aretz hamas.
Did you hear it? The Hebrew word, Hamas. The earth was filled with Hamas. Look it up. You just heard it. Violence. I can write it in Hebrew if you want, but Hamas. Yes. So, that is just icing on the cake for you. So, now we have all these things converging. Now, next week, I hope we can talk about what that means for us practically. What are we supposed to do with this? What are we supposed to do with this? Jesus said, you know, you can tell, like, the signs of the sky and when, you know, the weather and the seasons and stuff, and yet you don't, I'm trying to communicate to you. And he said from the very beginning, I gave you the sun, the moon, the stars, first of all, for signs to communicate with you, and also for seasons. But that's not the main reason for those things. And, you know, God is saying, I'm trying to tell you, you need to watch the sign of the times. And then, of course, Jonathan, next week we'll pick up with what we should, how we're supposed to practically apply this to our lives.
All right. Thank you, honey. Well, there you go. There are all of those different things that we've talked about now that are all converging around us. And the big question is, so what do we do with it? What do we do with it? And so that's what we'll talk about starting next week, is how can we be ready? So please be praying for us that we really can do a good job with that. All right, because I think that's pretty important. All right, let's pray. God, thank you so much for your word and how so faithfully you keep every bit of your word, your promise, your commitment, your prophecy, your judgment, your grace, all of those things, Lord, you keep them all perfectly. I pray, Lord, that you would cause us to be able to take all that we've learned and get a true sense for your word for us with all this, what we should do. And then as we prepare, Lord, help us know how we practically today can be prepared so that when you return, you will find us ready. In Jesus' name, amen.